Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Elevated Network. Elevated Places Network presents A Time for Justice. And I am your host, Sister Pamela Muhammad. And I would like to thank you all for calling in or dialing up to listen to our show tonight. This show, A Time for Justice, is a show that discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion with legal minds. We discuss this country's century-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impact these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions that we see. So, our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct often seen, which are really just distractions from the truth, which is the pathway to justice and equal protection. So let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions, which are in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. And again, I would like to welcome you to A Time for Justice. And my name is Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad, and I am so excited about tonight's show. We have some wonderful, wonderful guests. We have sisters tonight, and our topic tonight is women making a difference in the law. And this is really a very important topic to me because I am an attorney, and I've been a lawyer for 30 years. Plus years, and it really is a honor and a privilege to serve our communities. Many of us started out on the path with ideals of the changes we wanted to make, and you know, it's just so beautiful that those of us who are under these teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we are actually able to live some of our dreams and actually accomplish some of seeking justice. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest for tonight, and then we'll open up the mic and we'll start the show. So first off, I would like to introduce Sister Barbara Muhammad. And I want to introduce Sister Barbara Muhammad first because she is one of our wonderful, longstanding pioneers. She's been in the nation for years, and she has been serving this nation and Black people for a while. And so I want to open up with introducing Sister Barbara Muhammad. And Sister Barbara is a person who is licensed to practice law in the state of New York, also Washington, D.C., and in the United States Supreme Court. Sister Barbara currently lives in Lithonia, Georgia, and so she's actually down with Brother Minister Sharif Muhammad at the mosque in Atlanta, where she serves in so many capacities. Sister Barbara actually has her areas of practice of family law, corporate law, domestic relations, criminal law, and prior experience. She's worked for the New York City Department of Employment. She's worked for the district attorney's office. She worked, again, with the capacity of the mosque in New York, number 7, and that was from 1981 to 2007. So currently she is in the general practice of law. And I have to definitely say that Sister Barbara, like I say, she brings so much to the table. Sister Barbara was the head of the New York legal team in one of the major lawsuits where the New York police sued the mosque, and they worked so much. She was the head of that team, had the case thrown out several times. Case went on for 5 years. So we want to really give some insight into who this sister is. So let me go ahead and open up our beautiful Sister Barbara's mic. And I did tell her that I was going to also make sure that I acknowledge that she's, Sister Barbara is a married sister, and Sister Barbara has 3 children that she's raised and many grandchildren. So without further ado, let me go ahead and open up Sister Barbara Muhammad's mic. Sister Barbara.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam, Sister Barbara. Thank you so much for joining us again tonight on A Time for Justice. Yes, ma'am. How are you?
I'm fine. It's a pleasure.
Yes, ma'am. It's a pleasure. The pleasure is mine, and I'm so honored to have you join us, Sister Barbara. And so I want to go ahead and introduce our next special guest, and this guest is very, very special as well, because it's none other than our sister, who is a judge, Sister Nichelle Muhammad. Now, Sister Nichelle Muhammad has been a judge since April of 2016 in the Mount Vernon City Court, and that's in New York as well. And people laugh because they say I have 2 New York attorneys and lawyers on tonight, so this is such a blessing. But as far as Sister Nichelle, let me continue. She is the first Muslim and Latino judge in the city of Mount Vernon. Sister
wow.
Nichelle, prior to becoming a judge, she was a practicing attorney for more than 20 years, which includes 14 years or so in the areas of municipal defense, family, matrimonial, and criminal matters. So this sister has just a vast amount of experience. She's actually, you know, worked in the federal and appellate courts throughout the state of New York. She's won prevailing decisions in the department's appellate division. Sister Nichelle has actually also argued before U.S. Supreme Court Judge Sonia Sotomayor. And so, see, this is very, very interesting and very, very laudable and, you know, just so impressive. Sister Nichelle actually graduated from C.W. Post College of Law in college in Long Island, and then the Brooklyn School of Law in 1994. Now, Sister Nichelle wants us to just notice that she lives with her husband, Brother Arthur Muhammad, and her 4 daughters, Naja, Mecca, Isha, and Amira, and they're in the city of Mount Vernon. As I said, she began practicing law in 1995. So I'm going to go ahead and open up her mic, because we're going to come back to some of the things in both of these sisters' bios as part of our discussion on women making a difference in the law. But let me go ahead and open up Sister Nichelle's, Sister Judge Nichelle. Well,
yes,
Assalamu
ma'am.
Alaikum,
all
sister.
Praises due to Allah. Assalamu alaikum,
yes,
Sister Pamela.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Nichelle.
And assalamu alaikum to my dear sister, Sister Barbara. My soul.
Wa alaikum salam.
And I'm so happy,
so happy
to share. Yes, ma'am. Sister Barbara and I go way back. We have a history.
That's right.
And I love her dearly. All praises due to Allah. But Sister Pamela,
mutual.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Feeling
yes,
the mutual.
Sister Pamela. I'm
yes,
so happy
ma'am.
To be here this evening. And I thank you for a beautiful introduction of those things. And I would like to get into whatever topic we need to get into today for the people to hear. What I'd love to share about being on the bench, being black, being on the bench, being a Muslim, being on the bench, and Latino. For the record, I'm ticking off a whole bunch of boxes there. I happen to be half Puerto Rican, half black. And so for what it's worth, the Latino judge came from, they never had a Latino judge in Mount Vernon. So I was, since I was half Puerto Rican, a Latino judge, and certainly they never had a Muslim. So I was the first Muslim Latino judge in the city of Mount Vernon. But at the end of the day, it's all black. We know that it is. So all praise is due to Allah. And I'm happy to be here and happy to be a follower of the most honorable, the honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And thank you, Sister Pamela and Sister Barbara. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, ma'am. Look at that energy. We just love our sister Judge Nichelle Muhammad, and it is such an honor and privilege to have you on the show, Sister Nichelle. So, yes, so as we said, the topic is women making a difference in the law. And it really came from a communication I had with Sister Judge Nichelle, because she was expressing how glad, how thankful she was to be able to make a difference and to try to make a difference in her practice and being a judge. And so that kind of gave me like a bell ringing, like, yeah, because women do make a difference. So we want to talk about that, because we want to talk about the history of black women in the law and black women who, you know, we're very unique in our profession, because coming from the descendants of slaves and having to form ways to provide resources, you know, for our children. There was times when black women in our clubs that we formed, we dealt with the social issues, especially improving the general welfare of children. We knew that our children were our future. So rather than just looking at them as individual children, we tried to improve the group, you know, promoting child welfare rather than punishing mothers. And we know today a lot of times the criminal justice system or the justice system is about punishing our people. It is about punitive. And so having someone like Sister Nichelle on the bench is so important with her mindset. And Sister Barbara, I know you've worked your whole legal career to make a difference. So let's just open it up with, talking about what brought you here, wanting to be a lawyer or a judge, and either one of you all can begin with that topic, you know, mine. Sister Barbara.
You want me to begin?
You can.
Yes,
yes ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead.
It's weird because I wasn't even planning to be a lawyer. I was going for a degree in business administration. I was matriculated for that. And I was married, getting ready to separate from my then husband. So we were talking about separating, and he said that, you know, he would, you know, continue to support me while I was in school. And then he said to me, "Why don't you go to law school?" He suggested it. I said, "I never thought about it." So we had a daughter, right? She was a toddler. He said, "If we separate, you'll be able to take better care of her with my help, you know, as a lawyer." I said, "Well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to apply to law school to see if I get in. And if I don't get in, I'll stay and finish my bachelor and in business administration degree." So I applied. I got accepted by 5 law schools, and that's how I got into law.
Yes, ma'am.
That was the start.
Yes, ma'am.
Yep.
Yes, ma'am. And this thing about you, Sister Barbara, because you're very humble, you know, I hear you saying is that you have always been a genius when it came to business and administering businesses. And we're going to talk about We're going to talk about some of your talents and skills.
That's pushing it.
Seamstress, all of this, extraordinaire mother. So, Sister Nichelle, could you weigh in on that? I know what brought you here wanting to be a lawyer and even coming into becoming a judge. Could you share with us some of your story?
Yes, ma'am. All praise is due to Allah. Yeah, you know, I think I knew from a young age that I want to be a lawyer.
Wow.
Hold on 1 second, sisters. I knew I wanted to be a lawyer when I was very young. When I was about 10 years old, I said, I'm going to be a lawyer or I'm going to be an actress, one or the other.
Yes, ma'am.
I wasn't able to achieve actress. So at some point in my banking career, when I was working at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, I decided, you know, I'm going to go to law school. And one of the things that intrigued me about the law was not only that it was a skill where you help people, but it was something that if I didn't want to work for someone, I could hang a shingle out and have my own firm and have my own business. So it made sense to me that, you know, I can try to achieve this, and if I don't want to work for anyone, I could become and have my own law firm. So I started going to law school while I was working, at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and I went part-time because I couldn't afford to not have my job. I was living already in an apartment outside of my family. So I went to law school part-time, and I used to work at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which is down near the Wall Street area. And so 4 days a week, I would take the train into Brooklyn. I went to Brooklyn Law School, and I went to law school part-time and worked and, you know, became a lawyer in or about 1994. I took the bar exam in 93. I passed in 94, I believe. And I remained at the Federal Reserve Bank for a few years, and then I left and joined a small law firm in the city of Mount Vernon, actually, where I then transitioned from the city of Mount Vernon, the law firm, into working for the actual city of Mount Vernon in the Corporation Counsel's office. And that was a beautiful time. I did family law, a little criminal law, and then when I left the city of Mount Vernon, I did some really big-time stuff with federal criminal for a minute, a few cases, and I learned so much. And in the city of Mount Vernon, a judgeship became available, and it was a highly coveted seat, meaning a lot of people wanted it. So I had to interview, and I did, and became a judge in 2016.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, and that's beautiful. Because that, you know, because it's interesting that only 5%, and this is some stats that I've ran across, that only 5% of lawyers in this nation are Black. And, you know, a lot of times the ability to serve people, to mentor our, you know, young people in our profession, and even the ability to leverage our ability sometime to help others, you know, is one of the perks of being a lawyer. Is that something that, you know, either one of you all felt like it would be a driving force to say, you know, I can get in here and I can, you know, maybe get in the system and see if I can help some others in my community? I know that was something I looked at as well.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I could tell you for sure. When I first started working, I was with a firm that did family law and a little bit of criminal defense, and that's all about helping your people, you know. And when you feel like you have that gift and you want to help folks, and you know, we realize that only 5%, like Sister Pamela said, are lawyers, and Black people are lawyers. And you understood how important it is for you to get in there and to be able to give that skill set to your people. And, you know, I always say that if I would never make any money, because I would represent everybody for free. I mean, they just said, look, Sister Shell, I need to, and there I am, I'm going to court, and I mean hard body. I don't mean just a little talk on the phone. I mean, I'm going to court appearances and, you know, doing things, you know. But so it is a service industry. That's what the law does. Lawyers are service people. It's a service industry where you're helping people. And nothing gives you more satisfaction to me than knowing that you've helped someone. So that attracted me big time with wanting to become a lawyer, for sure. Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I enjoyed helping people, too. I enjoyed helping people. I got a lot of satisfaction from helping them.
Yes, ma'am. And, you know, it's very important that we put it in context, because being a member of the Nation of Islam, Sister Barbara, that is something that, you know, it's our mission. We're not only lawyers, we're mothers, you know, we're MGT. We serve the community, and you have that was a role actually that kind of brought you to the nation. Isn't that correct? I mean, you came in, and I think you saw a need and began the service.
Oh,
yes, ma'am. You want to talk to us about that a bit?
Oh, okay. When I was working in the DA's office, I met Sister Ava and Brother Larry, who was my husband at that time, and they worked in DA's office, and I just got, it's like Allah sent him to get me, to get me into the nation, because he came back, we were practicing law together, and he said, oh, I want you and Ava to come with me and hear this man. he said, y'all got to hear him. So he took us that Sunday to mosque in number 7 in New York, and we heard Minister Farrakhan, and we accepted on the spot right away.
Beautiful.
It was awesome.
Beautiful.
And ever since that acceptance, we were going, working, doing a lot of things, a lot of legal different legal activities. It was exciting.
Yeah, that's interesting because, as we know, this field is, it's a male. We've got probably more males in the field than female.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a woman, as an attorney, Sister Barbara, I've heard you say also, Sister Michelle, we still have to work really hard. And so Sister Barbara started out by talking about a case that you worked on. So you all have done those hard cases. I want to, give some balance also with Sister Michelle being on the panel because she is a city judge. And tell us a little bit about the role of a judge and how your particular perspective, how do you make that role better? How do you bring a perspective that you feel like you can make a difference? Just, tell us a bit about your view from the bench. Yes, ma'am.
Praise is due to Allah. Well, let me say this, sisters. I am the only female judge there at the moment. There are 3 males, 2 are black,
wow.
And 1 is
a
Caucasian judge who's part-time. And so we are almost like the full-time judges are all black, 2 black men, so I'm the only female. But what I can tell you is, of course, being a woman, we bring a little something different to the seat. You know, women tend to be a little more, I don't want to say that men don't have this quality, but the women tend to be a little more engaging in that. There's more compassion. We just have it in our nature, a little more compassion. I believe, people appreciate the female perspective, which brings compassion, a little care, a little more touch of the feminine thing we bring. Men don't have. It doesn't mean that
That's
men
right.
judges can't be compassionate, but it's a little something. You understand?
It's
and
different.
Then putting
it's
on
different.
Top of that, it's different. Putting on top of that the Nation of Islam in my life and being a judge that comes from that perspective, from the training that we have and all
mm-hmm.
of the teaching,
yes, ma'am.
My courtroom is very different than anybody else's because not only do I show compassion, and I will share with the audience and with the both of you, I had a talk with Minister Farrakhan one day, and he told me, he said, sister, and I said, people think I need to be a little meaner, a little harsher because I'm just too, he said, what? He said, no. He said, our people have been beat up so much that any kind of mercy or compassion you could show them is better for them. Don't do it that way. And so I got my marching instructions from the man himself that said,
mm-hmm.
listen,
that's right.
Show compassion. Show mercy. Don't be that way. Our people have been beat up, and I got news for you. When we do it, when I show that mercy and I treat people like then I, when the defendants come in, and criminal in particular, I make sure I address, good morning, Mr. Jones. I say hello to the counselors, but I also address the defendant. And then we deal with the matters at hand. When the crimes are being recited and they seem a little like real deep, I look over at my brother or my sister and look at them like, really? That's what you did? A little something like that. And I'm telling you, the self-accusing spirit that we have in our nature, that we have naturally, always comes out. I have yet to see a person in my courtroom when they're being faced with Judge Johnson, which I'm called on the bench, but they know who I am, and they know who I represent and who I'm with.
That's right.
They're always very, very remorseful. They look kind of like embarrassed. And then I say, listen, and I always tell them, I'm going to give you some mercy and some beneficence. You know what that is, right? And I mean, I'm teaching from the bench what the most honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I mean, I drop seeds like, come on, we have to rise above emotion into the thinking of God. And I don't have no problem mentioning it because it's my courtroom. And that's what I can do. I can show compassion. There are times when those white officers look at me like, why would you, how can you call beloved to the guy that punched the person in the head? Because I can, because it's my courtroom and I'm doing something different. I'm saving these people. So it is a different courtroom just being a woman, but it's a different courtroom being a woman that has the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and in the Nation of Islam. And I give it to my people every day. And they know when they see Judge Johnson, I love him, but if they need a spanking, I'm going to give it, but I'm going to give it with some love on it that they know that they have to suffer their punishment, but they'll be all right. All praise is due to Allah. So that's female, but more importantly, it's Nation of Islam, where my leader, teacher, and guide has taught me that you show mercy and love to all. And if I'm going to be a judge, like God is the ultimate judge, he is merciful, he is beneficent, he is compassionate, and that's what I represent on that bench. All praise
is due to Allah. Beautiful. I also try to copy that with my clients and cases, because the minister, I never forgot, he said that we shouldn't be too quick to judge because we don't have all the facts. And I always remember that, you know, because we can look at someone and say, oh, my God, he's a this or she's a that. But I don't have all the facts in their life. So I'm not qualified to judge them, but and I show them love. I learned that from the minister. Oh, my gosh. I try to copy his behavior, and it has helped me so much. Just, you know, dealing with people, you show love. Even when other people may think they don't deserve love, everybody deserves love. And from being around the minister, that's one thing that I have picked up is the way he treats people. I mean, it's just awesome.
Yes, ma'am. That's beautiful. And this is really, you know, just beautiful. Y'all really have me in tears here because this is the love and the compassion is really coming through. So, you know, Sister Nichelle, as I'm hearing you speak, and let me say this. This is a call-in show. So if you have a question or a comment for either of these two sisters, please press the number one to get into the host queue. So press the number one if you have a question or a comment for Sister Judge Nichelle or Sister Attorney Barbara. And so going back to Sister Judge Nichelle, so in your bench, now you do cases dealing with evictions. I know you do some crimes. You do a lot of status offenses, I believe. Is that? And so with those type of cases, and I would guess that maybe drug cases are some of the lower level drug cases come through, like the marijuanas. So how can you create change sometimes? I know there's the punitive side, there's the sentencing side, but do you have an opportunity to you know, do any type of programs to help our people who may need services? Are you able to do any of that from your, you know, the bench as a judge?
Yes, ma'am. All praise is due to Allah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So to be the judge. Yes, ma'am. I happen to be the judge that's over the drug court right now. Now, drug court, very personal to me because my father was a Vietnam veteran, became a drug addict after leaving that war. And the minister talks about how at some point when he was the minister in Harlem, how he would go out to the streets and he would talk to and minister to and give hugs to the drug addicts that were out there. In my mind, my father was one of those drug addicts because he was absolutely became hooked on drugs, of course, heroin at the time. could not kick it. When they got back from Vietnam, it was terrible how they were treated. And so he sunk into that life of being a drug addict in Harlem, because I'm originally from the Lincoln Project in Harlem, where my father was born. And in my mind, the minister, when he says he spoke to and prayed for a lot of the addicts that he saw on the street, I felt like my father was one of them. I won't go there right now, but the point is, when my father was a drug addict and he died as a result of his drug addiction, he died of AIDS at the age of 48 years old. There were no drug courts in the court system, but now we have what we call drug courts. And I'm over the drug court in the city of Mount Vernon. And what that drug court does is it separates those charged with drugs, and they have an addiction problem because it's a disease, and we force them to go into programming, and we do stuff. So they're not in the regular population with the rest of the court. And we have a coordinator that makes sure he tracks them every day, that they're in program. If they need a long-term facility, we put them in. We got to spank them. We have sometimes, you know, somebody, we put them in to take them. They jump out the truck, and they run another way because, you know, that addiction is heavy. And so in drug court, when we find them and they get arrested, I got to spank them like, you jumped out the truck. What were you thinking? Come on, you got to be strong. And we do that in drug court. Be strong. And I always use inshallah, you know, Allah says, you know, you got to rise up. I use all of that, and they love it. So we have an opportunity. And then also, I also participate in a court that we just instituted recently called the Emerging Adult Justice Part. And what that deals with is those young adults between the ages of 18 and 25, because we did research that showed that the brain does not fully form until someone is over the age of 25. So all of these young adults in 18 to 25, you know, we were taking care of the 17-year-old and under, because they're the youth, right? There were programs for them, but there was no programs for the 18 to 25-year-olds. And listen, I got a bunch of 20-something-year-olds, and trust me, I know the brain is not formed yet. Okay, they need help.
That's right. Yes,
so all praises. So we have that court now. And let me tell you the beauty of that court. We just started it maybe 2 months ago. The beauty is that we are getting them trained in skill. We're not just doing okey-doke, here's a mentor, and oh, by the way, you know, are we going to get your GED? No. We're getting them training skills. Like if somebody says, I have an interest in being an electrician, then doggone it, we're training them with an electrician. We got people coming in, taking them over to let them be an electrician. We got an HVAC program where they can learn HVAC, you know, HVAC. And they're like, oh, we want to do that. We get ready to do this thing with the theater. Somebody's interested in making movies or whatever. We're going to have Malcolm Lee, which is the cousin of Spike Lee, come in and do some training and figure out how we can get them internships on set to carry some lights or do something where they can tweak that. So we're not just doing, you know, GED, get your GED. We're actually giving them skills. And let me tell you how these people are turned around. That's all they need. They need the love. They need the time. They need the opportunity. So, yes, in the court system, I'm able to participate, and I do it on a weekly basis. And every time we're in court, so you stand affirmative yes on that.
Yes, ma'am. And this is so important because a recent study of the American Bar Association, which is, you know, this is a bar for the listeners. This is someone that lawyers, governed lawyers, one of the organizations, they said that 7% of judges in this country are black. So you see how important her role is. As well as the fact, Sister Barbara and I know as attorneys, is so important because of the racial bias that we get black attorneys and black attorneys that will fight, that do care, and that will go the extra mile to make the difference. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there. Sister Michelle, that's a really beautiful, beautiful program that you're describing to us. And inshallah, we'll see this duplicated around the country. Because as we know, right now our children are suffering, our girls are suffering. There's an article in the Final Call entitled Delays, Bruises, Lost Teeth. And this article is about black women suffering. And so I know the type of court that you're in as well. You probably see some of those domestic abuse cases. you know, we did a show not long ago about how drugs sometimes are like the underlying cause of a lot of problems, a lot of cases, a lot of neglect. So what you're saying about the drugs and treatment is so important. But going back to the Final Call article, where we see the lack of accountability to protect and respect Black women. And we, you know, we are Black women, so we really take this personal. And we see this Final Call article that discussed Anjanette Young, who was a lady in Chicago. If many of us remember, she was the one they arrested, and I believe she was naked on the film. Then
the no-knock warrant,
yeah, you know, and this whole surveillance thing and the picking up our people at these disproportionate rates, you know, with no type of probable cause, just surveillance, you know. And so then we got this Nikita Brown, another sister who was walking her dog and was accosted, and another sister's teeth being knocked out. And so, you know, this whole issue about Black women villainized in the law is becoming so prevalent. And do you see any of that in your courtrooms, Sister Nichelle? Can you know what? And Sister Barbara, I know you're down in Atlanta working with the 10,000 Fearless and working in the community, as well as just having a long career. So you know, let's talk about that. How do we embrace our sisters who are victims oftentimes in these courts?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I could say there was a sister who was a supervising judge in the 9th Judicial District where I served. She was the first Black woman to be a supervising judge. And she had started an all-girls court because she recognized, like we do, that the women needed to be separated from the boys, you know.
Okay.
And she had what she called a grip court, G-R-I-P. It didn't really, the words, I can't remember what the acronym stood for, but essentially it was all girls. And I think the court is still ongoing, but somehow it might have lost a little steam because she had a change of position. She's no longer the supervising judge, and I'm hoping that they're keeping that court going. But I was always so encouraged by that because she recognized that the women and the boys have to be separated, because they learn differently, and there are different things that we need to discuss that the boys should not hear, and that we need to focus on the girls in particular. And so she did that, and I think it was also in response to the fact that, you know, you had the program that President Obama started with the young men, and that wasn't to deny the girls, but we recognize that boys and girls should be separated. And so I don't have that in my particular court. It's up on a Westchester County level, but I know that she's had some successes with it because girls just go through different things, you know, when things happen, they go through a lot. And, you know, oftentimes being Black women, we're victims of not only how people of other persuasions treat us, white folks and other people, but also by how our own men treat us. So we can sometimes get a double whammy. And for that, I'm very clear with my sisters. I can tell you, you know, when we have the girls in my court, I have a beautiful particular. I was just on a school violence Zoom meeting, and we were talking about the sex trafficking stuff and the things that the girls go through. And I was ministering to them, if you will, saying, listen, you got to make sure you're safe. Yeah. You have to take care of you. You can't be out at a certain hour of the morning. You know, our girls don't recognize that there's danger there. So they're not being taught right? So they're out at 2, 3, 4 in the morning. I told them, I said, you can't be out at those hours in the morning to make sure you're protecting yourself. And part of that is how you dress and where you are and the times you're out there. So you have to be skillful to take care of yourself as well. So we do see a lot of cases in the city of Mount Vernon, but I can tell you the domestic violence goes both ways. I have women being brought in for it and men, you know, of course, more men than women. But you know, we take care of it, and orders of protections are issued right away in those cases. And oftentimes, if it's a husband and wife, the husband is the aggressor, he has to leave the home. So the order of protection, we believe, will maintain at least the status quo to get both parties to chill out. But I will say something else about that, but I'll let Sister Barbara go ahead and kick in. But yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Sister Barbara, did you want to say something about that issue?
Okay, well, I had some family court cases, but they dealt mainly with the neglect proceedings and, people having their children taken away due to neglect and things like that. I didn't have a lot to do with, like, fighting and stuff like that.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. And I think what you're saying, Sister Barbara, real quick, and we come back into it, and the thing being is that the women are being targeted, like Sister Michelle is saying. We had Sister Akila last show. We were talking about the music and the influence of the music and this culture that's making these young women go out without clothing or, you know, do things for money.
And
it's the sex trafficking, like Sister Nikisha said, and what you're saying, then it results in the children. And so the women just being targeted. So what you're saying is so important with that type of case, Sister Barbara.
Yes, because they end up neglecting their children. They, you know, they don't have themselves together. And they just don't act as parents.
And the children suffer. Yep. Yes, ma'am. Because even with the poverty issue, they're saying the stats are like 60% of cases really with the child protective is involving neglect. So we're seeing people and with the food, clothing, and shelter is really becoming a struggle, you know, especially in this pandemic. So that's all I wanted to add in.
Can you imagine that you have five children and they take all five of them away from you? And you have to do certain things to be able to get them back, get into different programs, and which is better for the children, really, but it's rough. The children miss their mother, and the mother misses the children, and they have to do a lot of things to be able to get the children back. That's the goal, returning the children to the mother, but there's a lot to do in between them taking the children away until they can come back home.
Yeah, terrible.
That's right. And you know, and I think also some stats, especially here in Texas, it's gotten so bad that the children are doing, they would do better if we left them in their homes than what's happening, putting them in these foster care and these state agencies.
Yeah.
So really working with them, as Sister Michelle, Judge Michelle was describing, those are important, very, very important, you know. And as we talk about making a difference, I just kind of want to throw that in. This is why making our own communities decent and safe places to live. And as lawyers, we have the ability to do that in our private practices. Like Sister Michelle said, you know, many of us out here working for smaller amounts of money to get those services done for our people. So Sister Michelle, did you want to add in on this issue? Because I got a big question for Sister Barbara as well on this. No, but what Judge Michelle is saying is so important. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. So, you know, this issue, I used to practice family law before I became a judge. And I was always defending. Well, I did some child support, but I did a lot of defense of people who were claimed to have neglected or abused their children. And, you know, just seeing the women in distress when they're dealing with their child I'll never forget, I had a case where the woman was extremely religious. And when I say that, she was one of these devout, she wore a little thing on her head, and she never listened to, you know, worldly music, and she never allowed her daughter to listen to worldly music. And she would not, she had to dress a certain way, and she wouldn't allow her to get vaccinations or anything. And mm-hmm. they really came strong against her. And I'll never forget that they wanted to place this young girl with her sister. Now, the sister, who was an older woman, they took the child away from the mother. They wanted to put the child with her sister instead of putting her in foster care. Seemed like it would be a great thing, but the mother begged me not to let this child go with the sister, who was a stripper and had, you know, might have been in the prostitution thing, but only with a select few clients. And I tried to fight so hard to keep that baby from going there, because the mother said, I'd rather see her go to a foster than to see her go with that daughter. She was trying to protect her. So in the family court with female children and stuff, it's tough. It really is. It is. I'm not sure if that answered the question, Sister Pamela, what we were getting
beautiful.
On. But yes, ma'am, it was
important.
Really tough.
Yes, ma'am. No, that's very important. And so one of the things, and so with Sister Barbara, I know work ethic and the need for unity is a big issue that I equate with you, Sister Barbara, because, you know, some of the cases that you all worked on coming up, and the fact that we have to work hard, and the fact that unity and some of the people who helped you, you tell me that story. So can you share, share for us about the work ethic, you know, give some advice. To women, to lawyers, you know, is it important that we work hard, you know?
Yes, because, you know, if we have a goal that we have to achieve, it will require working hard and working together with other lawyers. And in my practice, I was able to work with other lawyers to accomplish the goal. And It was very interesting, and we all worked for what was best for the client. So
yes, ma'am.
You know, we had good work ethics between all the different lawyers who were working together.
Yes, ma'am. And I know even like the concept now is that these big downtown law firms, they're just so impenetrable. But you know, coming against me, I'm a little sole practitioner, what about, you know, efforts that you all made in the past where y'all came together and you were able to, you know, be unstoppable?
Nothing scared us. We were ready to take anything on. That was the attitude of all the lawyers in the nation who were together. We didn't care who was on the other side. We just went to win. And we did win, you know, against like some of these lawyers, Fifth Avenue lawyers with a lot of money and everything. And we were able
That's
to
right.
win the cases against them. We were not,
yes.
The thing is not to be afraid. We were not afraid. We felt that we were right, and we went to get the results that we think we deserve, and we got them.
Man, that's right.
We didn't have any fear, no fear.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes. And even the sharing, the working together, you shared with me how you got your Supreme Court license. And that was, you know, can you just kind of give us some ideas on that? Yeah.
Okay. What happened, my prior husband who died, Brother Larry, he went to Howard Law School. And the people who went to Howard, they have they stick together.
Mm-hmm.
And even after they leave the school, they're good friends, they do things together. So what happened was I had started the practice, you know, after I got my license and everything. And one of Larry's friends, a lawyer who went to Howard also, he came to the office and he was running for Congress to become a congressman, and he won. He did become a congressman. As a matter of fact, I think he's still a congressman today.
Okay.
So he
okay.
said, "Oh, Barbara, I want to take you and some of your friends to the Supreme Court to see if I can get you guys going in up there." So it was 8 of us. And in the office, we had some Indian lawyers and we had white lawyers. So he took anybody who wanted to go, took 8 of us. So one girl was white, one was Indian, and the rest of us were black. So we all traveled to the U.S. Supreme Court, and he had us, he made a motion for us to be accepted as attorneys in that court, and we all got admitted in that court based on his motion.
Yeah.
It was fascinating.
Yeah, and I wanted you to express that because that expresses the need for unity and people helping each other. Remember that, Sister Michelle, Sister Judge Michelle, how people, when we were coming up, people would help each other. We knew that our collective work and responsibility was what got us older. Yeah,
And race didn't interfere. Because we worked together, even though we were different races.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to take a call real quick. We have a comment and a question, and I want to take this. And let's see. Did I get it?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam. Can you hear me?
I can. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Great. That's Sister Brenda in Dallas. Sister Brenda Muhammad in Dallas. I just wanted to thank Allah for all of you all, and just to say that I'm impressed. Oh, my God. I have really learned much, and I've enjoyed hearing the comments of both of the attorneys there and, of course, Judge Michelle and then Attorney Barbara. My comment is I can't remember how long ago it was, but there was a woman, I don't know if she was a civil rights attorney or a judge, but she was killed on some bridge somewhere, thrown over, and they couldn't find her body, or they did find it. I don't know if you remember that. That incident.
I think that was that story.
Mm-hmm. But do you remember?
I remember
in Washington.
That story.
I don't know if it was New York or Washington.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they found her body or something like that. But my question is, how concerned are you both about being women in the legal system? And, of course, what are the political aspects that sometimes can spell out danger or, you know, make you threaten your own security? You know, I was just wondering what you think about that. Thank you.
I never felt threatened.
Have y'all learned karate yet?
Oh, no.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Sister Brenda.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
I never felt threatened or afraid during the time, you know, that I was practicing law every day. Mm-hmm. I never felt scared. We felt like we were untouchable.
Mm.
We just went ahead doing what we were doing, and, you know, we didn't have any problems.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Well,
yes, ma'am, and I'd like to answer that, too. I've never felt threatened or afraid being a female lawyer when I practiced law, and now that I've become a judge. Now, you know, there's been some attacks on judges. We had a recent one here. Yeah, where a judge, Latino judge too, the person, she was a federal judge somewhere, and you guys might recall it, but they knocked on the door, and it was a white man too, and he killed her son. I think he shot. Father was able to avoid the bullet. I mean, you know, because sometimes judges make those hard decisions. So I've never really been afraid, but I will tell you,
And it's not so funny, where I said, let me make sure. So I had a trial with a young brother who was suing the city. He was suing the city, and I represented the city. And the city included some police officers because he had a gun and he got punched or beat up by the cops, and he was bringing a lawsuit. And at the time, I was an attorney for the city. Now, the city of Mount Vernon is a black city. So I always told people all the cases I get involved in, including defending the police department, is really to save the money that's coming into our community. Because, you know, these lawyers will come out asking for $1 million. So I'll never forget, I was doing a summation. I was doing my summation, but the brother was definitely gang-related. So in my summation, I made sure that I made it kind of, you know, I was strong on it. But I said, we can only ask God to help him to change his ways and become an active member in society. Because I said to myself, I can't leave this brother with the worst taste in his mouth. I got to put God in here somewhere so he doesn't come out of me and my family. But truth be told, Arthur knew him, knew his brother, knew the family. But I had to do my job, and he was wrong. I had to, but I did put it in there. But I never felt really afraid. There was one time being a judge where a brother in the courtroom said, I had made a decision to dismiss a charge against a female that he was bringing a charge against. Charge was arson or something, but the requirement was is that she lit something on fire that didn't belong to her. So apparently they were in her apartment, and she lit the bed on fire. So she was originally charged with arson, but I had to dismiss it because it was her bed. And he couldn't understand that. So he made a comment in court and said, I'm going to go talk to the judge. And so the DA's office got so upset, they thought, and I said, listen, I said, that brother there, he ain't coming to my house. They said, judge, no, he said he's going to come to your house. I said, you don't understand. I said, I know him. They said, judge, we have to put a detail on you, a police. I said, let me tell you something. That brother comes to my door and my husband's there, and all I got to do is make a dial to the Nation of Islam brothers. He won't believe me. I'm not afraid. And they still put a detail on me. They still put a police detail on it because if someone says something like, I'm going to the house, but they didn't get it. I'm from this community. So he literally meant he was going to come talk to me, but not that he was going to hurt me. But them DAs didn't understand that. And the white officers said, oh, Lord, it's a threat. So ain't no threat for Judge Johnson, not for Nichelle Muhammad. I bet you better ask somebody. You know, by the grace of God, I'm glad Sister Barbara never felt afraid. I've never been afraid. And you know, so inshallah, we stay that way, you know, because
you will, because God is in the picture.
Exactly, that's what I say.
And I think, you know, I wanted to add in on that, too, because sometimes going into these small towns where, you know, you've got a lot of racism, it's like towns that time forgot, you know, and like Sister Nichelle was saying, Sister Barbara saying, in these family courts, this is where some of your highest emotions are. This is where you have metal detectors and, you know, at the door because people's lives are in the balance. And that's why it's so important that we treat each other with dignity and respect, like Sister Nichelle saying, regardless of if it's an adversarial situation, you know, you have to have proper conflict resolution related skills. And so that usually, you know, has really helped in the faith in God, as well as proper, you know, proper decision making, like don't be out late at night. You know, have your husband assist, have your family member assist to just pick you up and, you know, be there with you. I know, Sister Barbara, you and I were talking once about what about all those years that your babies were, you know, with you while you working on briefs and working on this. You know, a lot of times we get to do our work in our family settings, you know, that provides some level of comfort for us.
Yeah, my children, when they were younger, they went to bed early. That was a good thing. Put them in the bed and do what I had to do.
Yes, ma'am.
I was able to work around them.
Yes, ma'am.
That's right. To get it done.
That's right. Yes, ma'am. When I was practicing law, I had a
I have four daughters, and they're all 2 years apart, about. I got two that are 18 months apart. So I was having babies for a minute. And man, I'm telling you, when I worked for that private law firm, small black law firm, and I thank God for the brothers and sisters that, you know, had their own thing. I worked for a small black law firm, and this brother here, who was the primary, taught me what it meant to be a good lawyer, and he was my brother. And but I would take the babies to the office, and I'd breastfeed them, put them down, but I worked in a private firm where I could do that, and I was able to bring my baby there, breastfeed the baby, put it down, keep working on my breathe, do this, do that, and that's what his small little firm offered me, which was great. So if I'd be there on a Saturday, we had to come in a Saturday and Sunday, because when you're in private practice, you got to be up and running when the people can come and give you, you know, to consult with you, and that was the weekend for a lot of people. So I'd have my babies right there, and I did my job, and therein lies the black woman who does everything, right? We nursing and working and cleaning and cooking and mental stability, and we do it all, you know?
That's right.
You know, and I always say, I like to remind people that 75% of the work, they say, is with the woman, with the black woman.
Okay.
And
that's right.
I'm clear on why that is. And so to me, when you see us rising up and doing well, whether it's Nation of Islam or not, when I see that black woman doing some good stuff, and there is some good stuff going on out there, we are reaching heights and, you know, doing some stuff. We just got to pull up our young sisters and brothers with us. You know that the time is near. So every time I see a black woman doing her thing, I said, okay, Allah, are we ready? Because 75% of even the work in the hereafter is with the black woman. That so teaches the most honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, no, you're right. Beautiful. My daughter, she's looking at me saying, yeah, well, you know, she used to have like a little baby seat underneath my big old desk of, you know, in my law office, and my clients knew her. And then I had, you know, with my oldest, I tell you, I had never, and this is the key with motherhood, because making a difference, we're the type of lawyers under the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, we know that child rearing, raising our children, contributing to our nation, you know, this is to me the best thing I could ever do. And so the first time I ever missed a deadline, you know, I'm a lawyer, I got depositions, I got some kind of schedule, but the first time that I ever missed one or had to reschedule it was when I had my first child. You know, we're superwoman, we can do everything, but you have your children, you have your family. Those are the most fulfilling jobs that I've ever did, you know. So I thank Allah for the opportunity. And then it just expands your breast, because how is like you said, Sister Michelle, when you look out as a mother, Sister Barbara, you look out as a mother in the needs of your community, some of your clients, some of their marital situations or just their needs, poverty situations. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes us really look different, differently at these matters. So I think that's so important. Yeah. So I want to jump into the pandemic and the fact that, you know, the pandemic, especially in municipal courts, I understand this is where we're seeing these evictions. Sister Michelle, Sister Judge Michelle, this is one of the jurisdictional issues. What is the condition, I guess, of our people as we're approaching now the end of some of the moratoriums? I mean, can you give any advice on what people should, what it looks like, just anything from your perspective from the bench?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Sister Pamela. Yes, ma'am. So, you know, the landlord-tenant stuff is really tough, I'll tell you. So right now in the state of New York, there's a moratorium on putting people out that expires January 15th. And this thing has been like a goalpost. Mm. Keeps moving. They keep extending it, right? So January 15th. And what's happening is, so you know, as a judge, it's a slightly different vantage point, because you got to be fair to both sides. So whereas you may say, well, doggone it, sister Michelle, most of our people are tenants.
You know, so we should be swaying on that side. As a judge, I have to be fair and impartial, because I got to tell you, there are black landlords, you know, and you know, you got a lot of people that may have a little money, so they buy a little income-making house, you know, but nothing major, maybe a two- or three-family, and they're renting it out in addition to working or whatever they do to sup their income, and they come in all hues, including our people, older, younger. And then when someone is not paying for an extended amount of time, it really causes you, for a landlord that's in that position that doesn't have the means of these corporate people or somebody who has the right to have these commercial properties with more than 10 or 30 units in it, they can lose their property. So right now during this pandemic, I can tell you there are people who have not paid their rent or paid rent in 2 years.
Wow.
And the landlord has got nothing. And so, you know, whoever's in this situation that was in the pandemic and had a COVID-related issue that stopped them from earning money and being able to pay, they've been afforded a great benefit because they've been able not to pay. But let me tell you what's happening. You know, they say, you know, things come full circle now. Now they're applying for the federal funds that Biden put out there, the ERAP, the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. They're being done through the states, and so people are now starting to get money. But the money they're getting does not cover all the money they owe, because some of the money was pre-pandemic, and some of it's pandemic. And ERAP is only covering 12 months and maybe an additional 3. But brothers and sisters and others, for that matter, are owing more than that. So what's happening is, as January's coming, we could see them facing some problems. Now, let me say this. The ERAP built in that once you accept that money, though, you cannot put that person out for at least a year. So anyone who got ERAP funds, even if it didn't cover the full amount, the landlord, by accepting those funds, cannot put them out for a year. So they are protected. So I see a lot of those people being okay, because once they took that money, so if somebody owed $30,000, ERAP paid $17,000. The remainder of that money's not paid, but because the landlord accepted the $17,000, he can't put them out for another year. He has to keep them in there for at least 1 year. So I don't see it being a big issue in my community now. I'm not in the city. I'm in money-earning Mount Vernon, which is a small little city here, 3.4 square miles or something. And I'm thinking we're going to be okay. You know, brothers and sisters ain't going to be on the street because they've locked it. However, brothers and sisters that own some of these properties are going to have a problem if they can't recover their money. And that's just what it is. And we have them on both sides. You know, the COVID-19 thing gave us hell to pay. I tell you, everybody's suffering on both sides. You know, but inshallah, the tenants have kept their place. And in January, when it expires, because those people accept the ERAP money, they got a place to rest their head for another year if that's what they wanted to do. So I'm not concerned that they're going to be on the streets.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Well, we have another caller. We're going to take a call from Brother Derek Muhammad. Brother Derek.
As-salamu alaykum, sisters.
Wa alaykum salam, Brother Derek. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Since I just want to hear everyone's views on the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict, or Kyle Rittenhouse, as many of us are calling him now. And I want to hear exactly how you all feel about that. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Yes, sir, Brother Dad. Thank you for calling, sir.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Well, yes.
Anybody want to
okay,
go?
So I'll start off really quickly. What, you know, the one point I want to make at the outset, as a judge, you see how the judge can control how things unfold in their courtroom? And
yes,
you can see how it can be done unfairly, because to the extent that it's borderline or whatever, the judge that's trying to be fair and just is going to do or you know, the judge that doesn't want to be can do other things, you know. So the law can be fluid sometimes. In other words, sometimes there's a gray area. And if you're a judge that's into freedom, justice, and equality, that gray area is going to give you an opportunity to help somebody.
But for a judge that's not cognizant or doesn't want that to be their case, they're going to apply it in a different way. So a lot of what the judge did shaped, if you will, some of what happened in the trial. And then if that judge happens to be pro-weapon, pro-self-defense and something else, it shapes even what happens in the courtroom, even though they're just officiating over the law. But the rulings they make are kind of like, will, you know, can be on the mind of the jurors, like, okay, so this judge is here and I'm going to be with him on this. So that's one of the first things I wanted to offer. The second thing is, you know, I didn't watch it on purpose. In the Black Lives Matter movement, I have my own feelings about it. But, you know, just a tough decision that was made. And I felt like perhaps, you know, because of what the judge did and swaying some of the, you know, some of the legal questions that were answered by him in a certain way, that it might have tainted the jury a little bit. But, you know, this is why we're taught we don't carry weapons, right? Because when you do, you're going to use them, and you're going to use them sometimes in a way that maybe you shouldn't. So, you know, he carried a weapon. And to me, mm-hmm. those people did not have weapons like that. And we always say you don't bring a gun to a fight that's just with your fist. You can't claim self-defense
right. yes,
if somebody
ma'am.
Hits you with their fist, but you kill them with the gun. It, you know, there's a disconnect. So, you know, I have some other feelings about it. It's white-on-white crime. You know, I know it happened at a Black Lives rally, you know, Black Lives Matter rally, but we're taught in these days that this kind of disturbance is going to happen between even people of the same race. And so it's an indication to me on how fast and furious we're moving towards this day of reckoning, which at the end of the day, if it's coming, then let it do what it do, you know?
Yes, ma'am. No, that's very, very. Any, Sister Barbara, did you want to add any comments, any commentary on that question?
No, I think Tristan itself did a good job.
Yeah, I think so too. Excellent, excellent. Because, like I, you know, I said in an article, I thought it was bizarre and confusing. Because it was bizarre to me when you even talk about a 17-year-old with a gun. That just
yeah.
that was bizarre. And then when you start looking like at defenses, then it goes into, like she said, some rulings that courts may make that make it very confusing, because you're looking at it from maybe, you know, I know they filed what they call a motion in limine that kept some
yeah,
of the evidence
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
Big argument about what was relevant, what wasn't. But when those type
oh, yeah.
of things happen, then what we see is maybe only a part of a picture. So me personally, I believe in separation as being the only solution as taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And this is just another example of why we have to really concentrate on making our communities decent and safe places to live. So, Brother Derek, I hope that answered, gave you some feedback on your question. And as always, we really thank you, Brother Derek, for calling in. Yes,
absolutely, Brother Derek. Praise
yes,
be to Allah.
Yes, 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 ma'am. And, you know, so I think we've got, we talk about women, we talk about the pain right now that is really with the targeting and the villainization of the Black woman. And I have to just raise up a Brother Ahmaud Arbery's mom. And I think we really should pray for her. You know, we have to lift that sister up for her courage and her tenacity to be able to sit through that trial with all that pain that is being, you know, just heaped upon her with the, the comments being made about her son who was murdered. And it's just really, I just thank her for her courage and for her strength.
That's
you know,
right.
Because we, yeah, Yeah, and you know, it's just all it's going around with the violence, you know, in our communities, and that's why it's so important. That case is a total separate involving, you know, racial killing. You know, that was just an outright lynching. And so we've talked about it before on the Elevated Places as well as this show. You know, I just can't imagine there are any defenses. But, you know, the pain that's in our community with even some of what we have more control over, which is making our communities decent and safe places to live, which is, you know, what's going on with these children, with these, they want to give our children a shot, very painful for me to see, and that's something that I want to see. You know, me as a black woman, I think that's a area that I should, you know, lend my voice to, because this is just,
absolutely,
you know, part of that depopulation agenda that we're taught that is being practiced on our baby. And again,
right.
Separation is a major solution. So we're really down to the last 15 minutes. I don't know if, you know, Sister Michelle, you have anything you want to, you know, add to the conversation. Sister Barbara, anything you want to share at this time? Callers, if you have a question or a comment on anything that our sisters have said, because, again, we tried to bring our perspectives, our experiences as women, you know, as well as how women are defendants and victims and plaintiffs, and the unique responsibilities of women working in the law. But, of course, we do have some victories because we are the MGT. And the Honorable Principal Sparkhan has instructed us how to, you know, save our women, save the children. And so, you know, Sister Barbara, you've given us some very important inspiration on, you know, how working in those early years, would you say there was no fear on the work that y'all had to do? So I think that's a topic that we can carry. As well, Sister Michelle, you know, because it's a legal show, a lot of times we talk about regular rights that people should exercise, such as the right to remain silent, the fact that you need to know your rights, the fact that you should always know what you're being charged with. One attorney, he's a magistrate judge out of Bessemer, Alabama, he talked to us before about the court dates and making sure that, you know, people coming into your court, are you keeping up with your court dates? Because we know sometimes municipal courts can collect a lot of fees, a lot of income from people. That, you know, what can clients do? What can people come in before your bench do to try to minimize some of you know, the punitive part by paying fees or making sure they get the lawyers?
Well, I got news for you. Here in the state of New York, we got a very brother and sister heavy assembly up there. We have a sister, Andrea Stewart Cousins, who's the head of the assembly. We got Jamal Bailey. We have, I mean, this is a body that's filled, and they're making the laws for the state of New York. And one of the things that they did, one, now the court system has the obligation to send to all defendants in a criminal case by way that they choose their next court appearances. So we have to ask them. We have an obligation. I say we have an obligation, Mr. Jones, to notify you of the next of all your court dates coming up. How would you like that done? You want an email? You want a text message? You want a phone call? You want us to mail it? What would you like, sir? And a lot of times they'll pick email, they'll pick text message, because they adopted a law that says that we have to inform defendants and stuff of their next court appearances. Now, with regard to fees and fines, they also just legislated and said, listen, you can't no longer suspend nobody's license because they didn't pay a ticket. Because payment,
wow.
This is tied into poverty, and we're not doing that no more. So now they also instituted payment plans. Now we got to, somebody can have a payment plan for their to payment of tickets and stuff. So here in New York, that body of brothers and sisters is doing some incredible stuff. They had a new bail statute instituted, which was not allowed. The interesting thing is, when I became a judge, I would never issue bail. I would always do an ROR, which is a release on your own recognizance, a lot. And the prosecutors would be so angry. And look what Allah did. A few months later, or maybe 6 months later, while I was on that bench, that legislature passed a law that said no more bail on certain offenses. And I mean, it was a whole bunch. And they said, oh, Judge Johnson, I guess your thoughts went over into those people because now all of a sudden we can't ask for bail on a lot of cases. So I'm saying all that to say that in New York, this body of legislatures that are up in Albany are filled with brothers and sisters that are conscious, and they are making, they've made so many changes, even in the landlord-tenant. At one time, when somebody's getting put out, the marshal would have to serve a notice on their door and give them, you know, 3 days to get out or 5 days. Now it's like you got to give them 15 days. They extended it. So now they got a built-in. I mean, it is incredible. So, you know, as a judge, hell, all I got to do is you know, hold the law that the brothers and sisters set up top because, you know, they're doing some stuff, you know. Now, there are things that I do jump into, like, for instance, probation and orders of protection and stuff like that where I just really, I'm like, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing this. Probation, I'm not going to put them there. And I've done that because I know how detrimental some of these things are to our people. And so to the extent that I have control, I've done a lot of stuff where I've not made anybody go on probation. I've allowed people to have some kind of reprieve and not do certain things. And so I've used my power that way, but it's always tied in to being fair. And I always explain it to the district attorney's office. I dismiss cases. I just dismissed a case recently. You know, I'll find their factual, their information, the misdemeanor information or their documents to be facially insufficient, and I let them know. And I make sure I do it where I justify it so you can question the black woman if you want, but I'm going to make sure that my ducks are in a row because I realize I'm a black woman, right? And so I got to make sure whatever I do, it's over the top, because I know how they'll be looking to take it apart. So I do those things every day. And it's really incredible how sloppy the district attorney's office can be, you know, but I'm fair to them. If they're not sloppy and they generally got something, then we could fight all day. But when they're not, I'm not going to sugarcoat it or pass it off because it's the DA's office. No, I dismiss it. So at one time I used to work, when I worked for the city of Mount Vernon, I worked for the police officers, arguably, right? When cases were brought against police officers that worked in my city, I had to defend them. And so right. Now being a judge, police officers come in. But because I know I have to be fair, just, and impartial, the fact that I used to work with police officers doesn't mean that I'm not going to make sure that they uphold what they have to. So there have been cases where they come in on the felony hearing. They're not prepped. They don't sound right. Dismiss. And I tell them, I write a decision, dismiss the charge, and you'll come back and do it right. Damn it. You ain't going to do it wrong. You're going to do it right if you want to bring somebody up on charges and before my part. And I've worked with some officers and stuff like that. But that, I know that I have an obligation. And no matter what my predisposition is, who I work with or might have, whatever, when you come into this courtroom, it better be right. And I've dismissed a number of cases, so we can do it from the bench. But those brothers and sisters in the state of New York, that is, have done a wonderful job of trying to be fair and just to our people that come in.
That's wonderful.
And that's beautiful. Yeah, that is important.
Yeah, these serious brothers and sisters.
Yes, ma'am. So that whole better be right mentality when they bring it to you as a black woman, I think we see that from a defendant standpoint, defense standpoint too, Sister Barbara, many of the battles that you fought, you know, that passion that's saying, I'm going to go the extra mile, because if you bring in cases that we can win because they're not sound cases. I had a victory myself today where a court has now had to, all praises are due to Allah.
That's right.
So,
you know, because I went the extra mile to say, you're going to have to make sure that you show me all the evidence. You know, you're going to have to make sure that, we're not going to just let it slide. And oftentimes, that's how you see just how non-sufficient, you know, some of these cases are. And I think that's the black woman. As we're ending, wanted to throw it out there that Sister Carmen, in accordance with the article in the Final Call, we know our Sister Carmen Muhammad, who is a fashion designer and has been in Italy.
Absolutely.
And they have the Fashion Week, November the 15th through the 21st. And, you know, just another article about how they doing it again. And Queen Amina, another fashion designer, was with her. And Sister Barbara, I know you were creative, too, with that and resourceful with your design. So, you know, just an all-around renaissance queen, Sister Barbara.
That's
so, you know, setting that tone as an MGT. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, ma'am. The dignity and the beauty of the MGT, you know, even as lawyers, we represent it, and we represent it well. And I think that's what we're trying to get across today. We're actually down. And so anybody want to give a closing, we're actually down to 4 minutes, so we got about a minute if someone wants to close out. I thank you, sister, so much for coming on. And we're so grateful as we almost closing out another year. So anybody want to close?
Please be tuned.
Closing words. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Sister Barbara, Sister Michelle.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Oh, Sister Barbara?
You can go first, Sister Michelle.
Yes, ma'am. I'll close out first. Yes, ma'am. So I want to say thank you for having me on, Sister Pamela, and I want the believers and all of your listeners, whoever they may be, to understand that, you know, we are upholding our end of this by becoming, you know, lawyers and judges. And, you know, it's a wonderful combination to have the black woman as a lawyer or a judge doing what we do naturally, right? We work so hard anyway. We historically have been people who have taken care of everyone around us. And just jumping into that lawyer judge role that we do is furthering what we do naturally, which is to be helpful, to be passionate about what we're doing, and give it our all and give it our best, because that's what that's in our bloodline, you know, and we're fierce fighters for what's right and for the people that we love. And so I'm going to continue to do what I do on the bench. I was recently granted my religious exemption. All praise is due to Allah.
Because
I didn't know what they were going
to
do.
Man,
and
beautiful.
My religious exemption letter was hard. And when I say hard, it was strong on who I am and who I follow. And Minister Farrakhan was all in it. And but all praise is due to Allah. So as long as Allah is going to permit me to do it, I have to mention my brother Arif Muhammad, the General Counsel of the Nation of Islam, who basically encouraged me to take the job, if you will, to be the judge, because I was on the line whether or not I wanted to do the judgeship or stay in my practice. But he encouraged me by telling me, said, sister, as a lawyer, you'll serve few, but as a judge, you'll serve many. And so I made decision, and I'm going to be there as a follower of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the workings and the preservation of the word and the teachings through the honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I'm going to stay where I am while Allah permits it. And then when it's over, it'll be over. But until I'm there, I'm going to be a black woman that represents not only being a black woman, but being a follower of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad and the teachings of the Nation of Islam.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful.
That's awesome.
Yes, ma'am. And Sister Barbara, I want to just close out by saying, you know, we talk about women make a difference in the law. And again, for the listeners, Sister Barbara has been the head of the legal team at times in lawsuits, the New York legal team. Sister Barbara served as counsel on the defamation suit with the New York Post, defending our minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So I can't think of any bigger difference to be making than a woman working and being part of a team with the Exalted Christ, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So thank you all both for coming on and really taking your time. Thank you for listening to the Time for Justice. To hear previous shows, you can log on. I want to thank our sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad, who is part of the Elevate. She is the Elevated Places. Her show is on Thursdays at 7 o'clock, the Elevated Places. Please tune in. Thanking the Elevated Places team and thanking my helper, my producer, Sister Samaya. And once again, thank you all for listening. And please tune in next week for more informative discussions. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you for inviting us. Thank you for having us. Sister Pamela, we love
you. Thank you. Thank you for
loving
us,
Sister Barbara.
Love you too.
I've been in it for years. Thank you. Yes. Love you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum.